Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 560. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a whole heck of a lot, Kevin. Just finishing up this part two of WrestleMania, just like you are.
This part of WrestleMania lasted a little bit longer. It was still over before 10:30, though, so 3.5 hours is still fairly reasonable, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, no, I agree, but still, in the end, I wouldn't have gone through with doing the Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley in the Raw Tag Team Title match. Those were infinitely pointless.
Yeah, the Aleister Black Bobby Lashley match may get the worst match of the weekend. I think I might have gone with Baron Corbin versus Elias over those two. But you know, whatever. That match is just easily one of those ones when we come upon it the weekend, just mow through in short order. But hey, let's start at the beginning, because why wouldn't you want to? We got Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley to lead off the show. And now that I'm looking at it, one could argue it was the best wrestling match of the evening.
You know what? It absolutely was. We're not going to have an argument about that.
No, yeah, like, I guess I was...
It was an excellent match. I loved it from start to finish.
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of looking at... I hadn't really thought about what the best match of the night was. Like, I really remember loving this match when it aired. But now that I'm kind of looking at all the other matches, like, not that I didn't think that some of them didn't serve their purpose or do well for the type of match that it was supposed to be, but as far as, like, just straight-up in-ring acumen kind of a match, this one was definitely it for the night, which is kind of crazy, I guess, now in hindsight, looking upon it. I believe the one talking point is going to be, obviously, the Charlotte Flair fatigue already seems to have popped up its ugly head on the Twitters. Are you in Flair fatigue, or are you in she's going to have a lot of good matchups camp moving forward?
No, if she could spend more time on NXT, she definitely has a number of fresh matchups for her. So no, I'm very, very, you know, I'm okay with her winning this match, and it was an excellent match. She definitely seemed very, very motivated, as was Rhea Ripley, of course, too. No, I mean, having someone new to face after, you know, having, you know, seemingly the same matches over and over again over the course of the last year and a half or two. You know, this was definitely the good Charlotte.
I mean, they've done a good job. You know, they've kind of kept her out of the loop for the better part of the last year, honestly, ever since she lost at WrestleMania. Well, she didn't really, she didn't take the pinfall, but she still didn't win last year at WrestleMania, and she's been out of the title hunt pretty much that entire time, because her and Becky had already had some rematches at that point. Am I correct?
Her and Becky have had, I don't want to count the amount of matches her and Becky have had.
Yeah, well, but I mean, I guess my point was is that Charlotte's been a little bit, you know, she's been out at sea a little bit as far as the character goes. Like, because they kind of start these feuds for her, and it's just like, oh, man, they're going back to that one again, huh? And it doesn't, you know, and none of them seem to last very long. So it was kind of yeah, that's I think I mentioned it pretty early in one of the podcasts. As soon as this matchup got made, I think I started saying, man, this would be great for Charlotte. And if they want to keep, I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised if the USA Network or NBC said, hey, we need one of your bigger stars on our show to help promote it a little bit more. Charlotte Flair's a good a choice as any because we've mentioned any number of time the women's division in AEW is definitely one of its weaker points, and the NXT women were killing it already. Adding in Charlotte Flair should do nothing but help it out.
Yeah, it absolutely should. Whether or not Bianca Belair stays or Rhea Ripley stays, I mean, this what on Wednesday that they're promoting the six-woman ladder match where neither Rhea or Bianca are in it, and there's still six women, good enough to be in that. No, the NXT Women's Division is an embarrassment of riches, and it's almost like they're. It's almost too strong in comparison to what, Raw and SmackDown, going with the same hands over and over again. Meanwhile, Triple H is keeping all those women to himself.
Well, yeah, I guess I could see to help out both brands, trading a kind of shuffling the deck a little bit and moving it. Charlotte goes to NXT. You do move Bianca. I guess it would make sense to move her to Raw with her man there. And move the other one to SmackDown, Rhea to SmackDown.
Yeah, you absolutely could do that, or you can make a Rhea, Charlotte feud extended.
Oh,
too.
yeah.
No, I mean I could see Bianca and getting on Raw. Becky certainly needs new opponents over the course of the next, few months. As WWE does appear to be intent on moving forward, as multiple times during tonight's broadcast, they absolutely advertised Money in the Bank as happening on May 10th.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be interesting to see. I would not be shocked if it's still happening in the performance center. At that point,
I wouldn't doubt that it is, actually. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they've already got their exception from the local government or the state government in writing to keep going.
Yeah, if we know one thing, the WWE does seem to do a pretty decent job of keeping itself out of lawsuits.
Yeah, it does. I mean,
They do. I mean, as with any company, they pop up from time to time, but the WWE is, I would think that they will get some type of guarantee, like you're noting, so that they can move along with taping. And I feel like I've seen a number of times now where they are really taking some pretty drastic measures to make sure that the performance center is clean for everyone involved.
Yeah, I was seeing today. Yeah, during the course of taping for WrestleMania, they changed the canvas and sanitized the entire ringside area before every match, or I should say after every match, but before the next match. I mean, good for them for doing that.
Yeah, so I mean, if they're doing those kind of things, obviously they're doing their best to try and limit things. I guess it'd be kind of interesting. Like, it's weird to me. Like, I don't know if the talent is all staying down there now. Like, I know that some of them obviously from their NXT days probably have a place down there.
That and for decades, it's been a trend for wrestlers to be living in Florida because of, you know, good the weather and no state taxes. So a lot of wrestlers have migrated down to Florida for over the years, even before the NXT years. But even and then you add that in, you know, the NXT class, the previous NXT classes, as well as even going back to the FCW classes, a number of talents live in the hour distance between Tampa and Orlando.
Yeah, so it would make travel awful easy for a lot of their talents to continue to do this. And yeah. I mean, we've kind of noted that even if they don't have everyone there, the WWE still has a shit ton of people on their roster and more than enough to kind of continue doing what they're doing. Because even if they, you know, end up killing some time each week, because I can't think, it'd be tough to fill a 3-hour Raw without putting some filler in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll continue doing what they've been doing with more promos than matches and matches from the past to keep things rolling. And then, you know, maybe then they still do, you know, one pay-per-view on the network a month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable. Yeah. Oh, all from trying to shuffle the deck from the ladies. Oh, man. I guess we can maybe get back on track with actual WrestleMania talk here. Well, like you said, I believe Aleister Black, Bobby Lashley was up next. You know, it was a match. It happened. It really, like you said, could if it gets cut, we're talking more closer to 10 o'clock finish.
Right.
And yeah, there just wasn't a good build to this. Next up was Otis taking on Dolph Ziggler. I guess we got, not that anyone would be surprised, but, why am I blanking on her name accompanying Dolph Ziggler?
Sonya Deville?
Sonya Deville, yeah. Oh, man, completely blanked on her name. Not conspicuously absent was Tucker, who was out because of injury. At least that's what the announcers were saying. But somewhat conspicuous by her absence was Mandy Rose, who obviously ended up playing a big part in this matchup.
She really did. Yeah, no. I mean, they've been telling the story for a long time, really dating back to December. This is really when it started. Maybe even November.
Right.
They've been laying really laying down the morsels. Threading it throughout months and months and months. The Valentine's date might obviously was February 14th, which was. What is it? 50 days ago or what have you?
Right.
So, yeah. No, they did a great job with that. No. I mean, Otis versus Dolph Ziggler, left to its own devices, was not going to be a particularly, you know, really good wrestling match. But, you know, they've told this story. They've kept it going. They've not backed off from it. And they paid it off tonight with Otis and Mandy finally getting together. And Otis getting his ultimate revenge.
Yeah, that's why I said that this one, it was a little predictable as to what happened, but that's exactly what they needed. You know, that's exactly what that matchup called for. Like, there have been so many non-revenge storylines recently that you and I have had to talk about. I'm glad that this one carried through with a victorious Otis. And, well, it was even funnier when him and Mandy Rose kissed after the match.
Yeah, no. Wait. Are Otis and Mandy going to get together in real life? I believe I've seen that somewhere.
I only saw a rumor that that was true.
I believe it is, or at least it has been. I assume it still is, since they're comfortable, you know, doing that together, especially during a time of what's supposed to be self-quarantine. I would assume that this would not be the first or last time they've swapped spit with each other.
Yeah, so good for Otis in real life. next up, we get Edge versus Randy Orton. I almost thought for a second that it was a street fight, and I was disappointed that no one showed up in jeans, but last man standing, you are indeed allowed to show up in your tights, so I let that slide. what did you think of the kind of, I guess, grudge match, last man standing match between Edge and Orton?
Started off hot, and then it just kept going and going and going. I mean, good finish, but yeah, it definitely went too long.
They could have shortened that thing up a little bit.
And this time.
There was a lot of, though Randy Orton, I think, does generally a good job in his matches of keeping a slower pace. This was a little too slow for my liking. It got a little long in the tooth, even if, that was another one where the ending was fairly predictable. You can't have Edge come back and not be a conquering hero. We had that happen. And Randy Orton will be able to fight another, fight another day. And hopefully Edge moves on to a fresher matchup, even though, of course, any matchup is fresh since he's been out for 9 years. So,
yeah, I mean, this was the match that definitely suffered from the lack of the crowd and the scenario. I mean, Edge's first singles match in 9 years certainly deserved to be. You know, they did what they could with it. They did the walk around the entire Performance Center brawl, which may have been more novel if Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa hadn't already done so previously in the last month on NXT. But, you know, this was the match that, you know, Edge, supposedly they had the band Alter Bridge lined up to play Edge's entrance theme. It was going to be a big, you know, it was going to be that WWE-style, you know, brawl match. And Edge would have gotten obviously gotten the big win in front of in his first singles match in 9 years, which he did anyway. But not in front of the crowd. As I said, this is the one match that really suffered for me, and I felt bad for Edge. You know, his first, as I said, we keep saying, his first singles match in 9 years, and it's under these circumstances.
That's a little bit of a rough one, but it does seem like he's back for maybe, if not a full time schedule, maybe appearance wise, it will be somewhat full time. But I would still think that his wrestling is going to be pretty limited over the course of his return.
Yeah, no. I mean, at this point, once they get whenever the hell they get back to shows in front of live crowds, no matter how big or small, You know, you can certainly move forward, and you know, I think Edge did a recent interview that made, you know, made some headlines where he pretty much has his list of guys he wants to work with who, you know, he's never had a match with before, which as it should be plentiful, because he, you know, originally retired in 2011, and the roster has certainly you know, turned over quite a bit since then.
Yeah, Randy Orton is one of those few familiar faces.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can definitely get an Edge, you know, in various feuds and matches with the more modern newer stars, and certainly go places with that.
For sure. Next up, on our WrestleMania show here was, the Raw Tag Team Championships. It was, why did I almost call them New Day? Dear Lord. The Street Profits taking on, good Lord, it was Austin Theory and, why was I going to say his name? I'm not even thinking Andrade. Angel Garza. Good Lord. I was thinking someone completely different. With Zelina Vega at ringside. You know, I know you mentioned that this wasn't... You didn't enjoy this match that much?
It was what it was. It was meh. I mean, it was thrown together original, then cursed with Andrade's injury, and of all people, Austin Theory, who hasn't even won a match on NXT, being thrown into a match on WrestleMania.
Yeah, I guess athletically I liked the match, but you kind of knew what was coming that whole time, and not in a good way. Yeah, like, they really had to throw that match there, because I believe Ray was one of the people that stayed at home because of the quarantine.
Yeah, I believe Ray got sick, but there's no belief that he actually has coronavirus. So, any thought of doing Ray versus... So, whatever original plans there were to do Ray versus Andrade as a one-on-one match for the U.S. title were scrapped. So, it turned into Andrade and Angel Garza challenging the Street Profits for the Raw Tag Team Championships. And then Andrade injured his ribs 2 weeks ago on Raw. And they had to come up with a replacement who ended up being Ross in Theory. That's our timeline.
Yeah, that's a heck of a timeline for
with whatever the original plans for the Street Profits were, one of the AOP also injured himself before all this empty arena stuff started, so Street Profits versus AOP wasn't a thing they could do either. As well.
Oh, yeah, I kind of forgot. I had noticed that they had not been around for Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins, I felt like. Or at least they weren't doing very much for them. So, I guess I'm not surprised to hear that one of them's injured. And those guys, for being big guys, they kind of have injury problems, it seems. Because is this their second or third injury break?
The second injury for a team, I'm not sure which one is which at this point. Which one had the original injury,
oh.
Which one has this injury, if it's the same one or the same body part.
Yeah, I'm not completely sure either on that. I mean, I can tell them apart when they're wrestling, but yeah, injury-wise, I'm not sure who... who's at fault for injuries. But, yeah, they seem to kind of have bad timing with those, at least in my opinion. So, that match was just kind of... even if I did like it athletically, it was just kind of there. Next up, we got some more... we got the last ladies match of the cards, which was... Bayley defending against five other ladies, one being Sasha Banks, Naomi, Tamina, and who's the last one that I'm forgetting here? Oh, Lacey Evans.
Lacey Evans, yes.
I don't know how I can forget the last one involved. So, anywho, I'm going to figure that it, much to no one's surprise, Tamina was the first one out of this matchup. And that, honestly, not doing this match as an elimination match definitely could have saved them some time. Do you think that that would have been a good idea?
Yeah. Only doing this as one fall? Yeah, I don't think it really needed to be an elimination match. Because it really only existed to put even the slightest wedge between Sasha and Bayley, which, with what had happened during the course of this match, you can certainly, you know, tell that story going forward without doing multiple eliminations and having this match go so long after, you know, a number of matches that were kind of pointless.
Yeah, that was kind of the weird thing. I expected a little bit more of a wedge to be driven between the two of them. And, like you said, like, it was a very slight wedge, if any, with Bayley not, possibly knocking Lacey off the cover. I'm sure it'll end up being used, but it's still maybe not something as overt as I was expecting. And maybe that's just good for the WWE, that they're being a little more subtle for a change than going over the top and batting you over the head with an oncoming change.
Right, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the SmackDown Women's Championship, you know, needed to be defended on WrestleMania. You know, they did what they did. They put the women together that they could put together. Dana Brooke was originally supposed to be in this match, but I guess she got sick in some level and had to be quarantined.
No.
Carmella hasn't been on TV in weeks and weeks, so I assume there ended up being an issue there as well. So it ended up being these five, and they did what they could with it.
Yeah, if that would have been an elimination match with even more women involved, that would have been long as hell. So, yeah, it was maybe for the best that it was, just down to where it was. And yeah, I guess I'm cool with, Bayley winning the match. I kind of, any time that there are a lot of people in the match, I usually expect the champion to retain. And Bayley did, and I'm glad that her role model gimmick can continue. Next up, we got the strangest match of the weekend, I would have to say.
Yeah.
as much as the Boneyard match yesterday was a little bit wacky and wild, I would say that it was fairly conventionally done.
Yeah, I mean, The Undertaker gets a lot of leeway when it comes to things like this. It fit both guys. This was a fucking acid trip. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I was drunk enough, certainly, and it was better than a John Cena versus Bray Wyatt what match would have been in the middle of a ring the stadium.
Yeah, it is definitely way better than you know, Worms being on the mat during the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt match. Yeah, I mean, it was fun, it was weird. It's always odd when you see them embrace the WWE embracing something like this when Matt Hardy was trying to get them to embrace something like this for years and they didn't go for it. So that was pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it myself. Like, this was it was a fun, weird matchup where they got the yeah, they just did a lot of weirdness, and I was good with it. There definitely were some people online that were not as happy with this matchup, and I think that they're crazy people for not liking it.
This was stupid fun. This was what it needed to be. We've seen John Cena versus Bray Wyatt in more traditional matches. They weren't good. They're not going to be any good, you know, with the both of them 6 years older. Let's just do this wacky shit.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I guess then we get the main event of the evening. This show is just moving right along. Drew McIntyre taking on Brock Lesnar. We get another one of those short slugfest style matches from our super heavyweights, and Drew McIntyre, in my opinion, certainly belongs in the super heavyweight category.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
I wouldn't mind seeing more than a couple of moves in these matches, as Goldberg and Braun was, and really this one was pretty much suplexes and the Claymore kick. You know, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a little more happening in them, but
I wouldn't have minded to be a little more than it was, but it was still effective.
Yeah, I kind of, I guess I expected a little bit longer of a match out of the situation. Just, I didn't expect a AJ Styles or, you know, Finn Balor length match with Brock Lesnar, I guess, which is, you know, maybe 10 to 12 minutes. But I guess I still expected a little bit more to happen than what did, honestly. Hey, you know, Brock Lesnar, for all the people bitch about him, has now jobbed in three straight WrestleManias to put over the babyface. What more can you ask out of a champion that a lot of people don't like? Like, it's just another one there that I guess there are some people out there that I feel like we follow that still don't get that. For some reason or another.
Yeah, no, I mean, Brock has... Since Brock signed, I believe, whatever his last contract was... Brock has been absolutely nothing but 100% professional. We're talking on your last year, year and a half, 2 years, what have you. Brock has done everything asked of him. He has, well, let's see. The feeling was Brock's contract was up after WrestleMania last year, and then he re-signed before he showed up to win Money in the Bank without actually competing in a Money in the Bank match.
Oh, right.
And since then, I mean, this version of Brock has really looked like he has accepted that he is a professional wrestler. He is no longer a fighter. There's going to be no more UFC fights. He's a bad, bad man, but he just doesn't have that in him anymore. I think he's accepted that. And he seems like over the course of last year that he's been having fun with this run in WWE.
Yeah, that's a good way to kind of say things. Like, he is certainly, I guess I hadn't thought about it, but it really has been the run since, I feel like there have been a couple of flirtations with the UFC ever since he came back. And I'm trying to think, everyone thought he was going to go back to fight Daniel Cormier. And that just didn't end up materializing for whatever reason. Because I don't feel like I ever ended up seeing a real reason why it didn't materialize. So, yeah, and he's been a lot of fun to watch in that time period. Like you said, like, he's really kind of accepted that he's a pro wrestler. He's cool that he doesn't have to do that much work. But the WWE needs, stars with his caliber of name recognition on, even if it's part of the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, Brock, yeah, he absolutely. Once again, we can all talk about what they did back in the fall with Kofi and how fast Kofi went down. That was bullshit. But, in the interim, they picked Drew McIntyre as their guy. And Brock, from that point on, has done everything he could do to, put over Drew from that night on Raw. He took 3 claymores and laid down for him and let Drew celebrate with the title too right here tonight. I mean, when Lashley took the Black Mass, he did the deal where right after the 3 count, he put his shoulder up and then was basically back on his feet within the next 5 seconds.
Oh, right.
When Drew was still celebrating within 2 or 3 minutes after beating Brock, Brock was still unconscious laying unconscious in the middle of the ring. He was still playing dead. That is a professional right there.
Yeah, I really, Brock's been a lot of fun, recently, so good on him for doing the job again. I don't know, I guess are there any wrap-up thoughts to go with, to talk about this 2-night WrestleMania? Like, I feel like we kind of covered a lot of the extraneous, like, future tapings and things of that nature last night.
As far as 2-night WrestleManias going forward are concerned, I'm less bullish than I was last night because there was a long stretch that I really was not all that into this show. It started hot and ended hot, and then in the middle it was a little eh.
Right.
And of course, you always have you're gonna have the issues going forward with trying to sell stadiums on 2 separate nights. Who goes to one night, who goes to the other night, and who goes to both?
Oh,
It's definitely something for them to talk about. But I'm more now thinking, let's keep the main show to about 4 hours maximum, and only do like 2 matches on the pre-show. Let's not have a 7-hour total show.
I think that's been kind of one of their problems, is that they've really expanded the show trying to get all the talent, or at least as many of the talent on the card as possible, the last few years. And as we noted earlier in the show, they have a small poop ton of talent at this point. So that's why you end up with like this many matches, plus there would have normally been at least 1 battle royal, probably a men's and a women's, at a minimum. And
the participation medal battle royals are something you can certainly do without in years going forward.
As much as I understand trying to memorialize Andre the Giant, that is not really the best way to do so. Especially since, you know, no one that ever has won it has... I guess Baron Corbin is the biggest name winner ever at this point.
I mean, Baron may be the one who did the most with it. I mean, they had Big Show win one year, which he pretty much had to win some year.
Right. He didn't even get to win first year.
Cesaro won the first one by last eliminating Big Show, and that ended up being just a disaster. You know, Cesaro's singles run managed by Paul Heyman. That did not have any legs to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from there, Mojo Rawley won one year because Gronk interfered, and then Gronk didn't show up for another 3 years. And then Matt Hardy won one year when Bray Wyatt helped him, that tag team that really didn't go very far. And then I don't even remember who the hell won last. No, wait. Braun Strowman won last year's. That's right.
I remembered that. Yeah, I wouldn't have remembered that, but you are correct. Yeah, after you said it, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's right. And you could argue that Braun Strowman's done more, but he was already on that level of getting well. As we kind of discussed last night, he should have had the title probably a couple of years ago, so he's getting it a couple of years too late, just like Roman Reigns did. But hey, that's evidently par for the course with the WWE at this juncture. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like Braun was kind of already on that path, so I'm not sure that him winning that really had a whole lot of impact.
No, I really didn't. I mean, it was part of the they did the gimmick with the Saturday Night Live Weekend Update guys.
Oh. Yeah, all the funny guy stuff from that. Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Braun was due a one-on-one match of some merit. After everything he's had to endure over the years.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely does. I guess I still enjoy him enough for the title run, so I'm not really going to argue, I guess, even if it's going to seem even extra hollow without a crowd reacting to him finally getting over. And it is kind of weird, I guess, because didn't he just win another singles title recently? Was it Intercontinental. Because Sami Zayn beat him for it.
Right.
So yeah, that is kind of funny that, he had just broken his single streak and, all of a sudden because of, Roman Reigns not wanting to, go out during a quarantine, he wins the big singles title. Go figure. So yeah, Oh, and you know what? That all came off of the WWE is trying to jam too many people into their mat, into WrestleMania. And that's why it ended up being 8 hours, is they're trying to get all these people on there. They have these Battle Royal style matches. Most years, they probably would have had another match probably with a multitude of participants to help get people in. Like, I feel like they kind of kept those to a minimum this year.
Yeah, no. I mean, a Battle Royal would have been just completely irresponsible. I mean, as it is, that deal they did with the 24/7 title and all those people, you know, jumping on Mojo, and, you know, before Gronk jumped in was borderline irresponsible in these times.
Oh, that must have been another one of those happenings during a break in between matches, which is when I head upstairs to, you know, do any number of actions.
Well, that's good. Good for you.
So I missed the irresponsibility of that. And I guess that explains why Titus O'Neil was the full host for the last half of the second night of the show. Which was just fine by me. I didn't really... I kind of laughed. I guess I felt like Gronkowski did the least amount with hosting that anyone ever has. Not that they seem to do very much, but... Phew, man, they really... Or, yeah, I guess he did get, what, 4 segments? Because he lost the 24/7 championship, didn't he, the night before?
Yeah, well, he knocked down Truth, and then his buddy Mojo, his best friend Mojo, pulled him off, and stole the win from him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess 4 segments is a decent amount of segments. Never mind, I'm gonna abort that thought. I guess any other random thoughts from you that maybe we haven't covered?
No. I mean, overall, I enjoyed this weekend of WrestleMania. I preferred overall night one to night two, but overall, you know, everyone worked hard, from the talent to the production staff. You know, I'm glad to have it. Lord knows when the next time I'm going to have as much fun as I've had over the last 2 nights is going to be. So I'm glad they went through with this. And as long as everyone in WWE stays healthy, I guess it was worth it.
Okie doke. Well, I guess I do have one last thing to talk about. Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company, which I believe is, yeah, out of Croydon, Pennsylvania. This is a beer that I picked up when I believe went to visit my parents. It is their Cherry Hibiscus Wheat. It is fruity and light, and maybe a little more hibiscus-y than flowery, which is not the best for me, but it's still a pretty tasty beer. If you're looking for something that's more of a spring beer, I would imagine that they have this available, and maybe seek it out if you happen to be in that region of Pennsylvania. I know I will not be there for a while, so I will have to find some equivalent for it in the future here. So that is the Beltime Beer of WrestleMania Night 2 review of At Stunt Granny. I'm at DeFrango11. He's at Stunt Cali. And rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Cool. That sounds good.